I'll be too nervous to. I'll probably be lost for words.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Lost of Words DraftKings podcast. Recording here earlier on a Monday, bank holiday here in the UK, and Matt was available during work, so we managed to get a nice one out nice and early. Matt, Houston Open, Stephen Jaeger stops the run of Scottie Scheffler. Just it took a 5.5 foot putt to be missed on the final hole for that to not go to a playoff. But very quick thoughts on last week before we move into this week.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I don't think it's really a great sign that I didn't really expect Scheffler to make that putt. I kind of knew he was missing it, which is, you know, I guess interesting for the best player in the world. And it just shows the variance in golf. Like, things are going to change week to week. And as dominant as somebody seems at one time, all it takes is, you know, one thing like that. And who knows what's going to happen going forward. So, you know, other thought I have is the Mexico correlation we made. And Jaeger was the top guy in my card in Mexico, and maybe should have copied and pasted that one. But another week where I had like five guys in the top 20, but no one coming through the finish line. So it feels tough to get somebody through right now.
Yeah, it feels like we made the right correlation without picking the right guys, right? And that sometimes, look, what I love about this kind of show, right? And this is not just to kind of make up for the fact we, at the end of the day, like, I didn't have a good week. It's as simple as that. I didn't have a good week. The picks weren't great. Billy Horschel was kind of my best chance, right? But I do still believe people have the ability to interpret the suggestions that we make in their own way, right? To get to different conclusions. And that's the most powerful part of it, I think, is that, look, the Mexico Open correlation was there. It very much played out. You know, it would have given you guys that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily. I think Jaeger in the end, when you look back and the people that were sort of posting sort of tickets on Sunday, maybe a little bit more popular than I thought going into it. But yeah, the link was there, and people can work from that. So I think that's the strength from that. Billy Horschel played well. Batia played well for you for a good period of time. So there was a couple of nice calls there. Interesting point you make about Scheffler. I think that we saw a couple. It wasn't just that final putt, right? Like, didn't he have a couple of bad putts over the week as well?
Oh, yeah.
That kind of suggests that he's not invincible. Kind of suggests that that is still always going to be a problem. And it's just going to be a case of, you know, look, it's exactly the same as last year, I think, or the year he won the Masters, right? He made won those three or four events in the year, and it was because he got hot with the putter, and you know, that might just be how it goes. He just has 3-4 week stretches where he's, you know, lights out the putter, and it's not sustainable. That's not to take away from the fact that he's been the best player for a long period of time now. Like, his ball striking is sustainable, and that's the main thing. But certainly shakes things up. It's gone from, oh, like, we, you know, Scheffler has to lose to, you know, everyone else has a chance to win the Masters.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, and I think obviously he's still a great chance to win the Masters, and he's going to be a heavy, heavy favorite for good reason. But anything can happen, and you know, golf is a game where there's no Tiger Woods. There probably never will be again. So winning three times in a row, like, you get a lot of lucky breaks to win twice in a row, and then, you know, that third week some things might not go your way, and that's what happened. The one thing I also have to say about Jaeger is the fact that he really wasn't playing that well coming into it. Like, the stats weren't that good. I feel like I didn't read it wrong. I mean, the Mexico correlation was there, but and even this week he didn't hit it that good. It was a lot of putting, so some of this stuff is just so unpredictable.
Yeah, like, you can't be right with everything. And like Alejandro Tosti, right? Like, where did that come from? Like, he's been terrible all season. It's just, you know, Dietrich's playing well, but Dietrich's going to do what Dietrich does on the weekend. David Skins has been okay and short spoons, and then, you know, Nick Dunlap's been terrible up until playing well again last week. Like, it does happen, right? So it's so difficult at the moment to predict, which is, you know, part of the fun, I guess. It's part of the fun of figuring out how we do this.
Absolutely, and the best part is we get another week to try again.
We do. So let's go into the Valero Texas Open then. Rory McIlroy is 12-3, and there's a definitive gap at Hideki Matsuyama 10-6, Ludvig Åberg 10-5, Colin Morikawa 10-1, Max Homer 9-9, and then we've got Fitz, Spieth, Connors, Fleetwood, and Benny Ann rounding out the 9Ks. First thoughts on who's the most likely to win this golf tournament?
For me, it's Åberg.
Yeah.
I, I really think he's going to win. This is the perfect, absolute perfect golf course for him. You get some wind, which he's really used to playing in. Played golf at Texas Tech. This is a course where you do see different skill sets win, but his power being long and straight off the tee will certainly be helpful. I just think in terms of course fit for all the courses on tour this year, this is probably the best one for him.
And I think it's interesting, you know, you talked about his driving. It's actually that straight part that I'm actually really interested in. Like we look at the sort of the winners that we've had in recent years, and you look at, you know, especially Corey Connors, like that's just the foundation of his golf, right, is to drive it decently long and straight as well. And that's exactly what, you know, Evo's done to, you know, succeed over the past few years and past couple of years, I guess. And yeah, when I looked at the kind of stats, and it's very easy just to say it's a strokes gained tee to green course, that's the same every week. But, you know, Ben Martin led the field in driving accuracy last year. He finished 10th, Charles Howell third, finished fourth when he led driving accuracy in 2022, and Ryan Moore led the statistic in 2019 and finished third. So generally speaking, if you drive it straight, you're set up for success, and whether that's long, short or indifferent, if you put it into the fairway, you've got a good chance to go. And I was texting with Brad this morning, and the first thing I sort of said is I think Åberg has the opportunity to really just take this apart. Whether I'm going to bet him at 14 to 1 or wherever he is, but I think he's probably the best value of these Morikawa, Matsuyama, Rory McIlroy group.
Yeah, I mean, value-wise, I do think Hideki was a pretty interesting price considering the way he's playing. His stats are incredible. And I could see him playing really well here. So he's the guy I think value-wise makes the most sense, but I don't see how you can pay up for Rory, even if he is under-owned.
Yeah. And then the other thing that I really like is ties in quite nicely. So going back to correlations, I see, you know, you see a couple of these courses that come up in correlations. People talk about Sony Open was one, and Maya was another one that people flagged up. There was one for me that really stood out amongst others, and that was the RSM Classic, which is only going to help the Ludwig Åberg case, right? But what I do with these correlations just kind of give people a little bit of an insight as to how I get there. Like I'm looking at the most random top performers at this tournament and just see where they play well before. So, you know, JJ Spawn, not a random person, but for him to go and get his first PGA Tour win, where has he played well before? What, he's had 2nd, 13th, 15th and 16th for the RSM Classic. Corey Connors had a top 10 there. Andrew Landry won here in 2018 and finished 4th at the RSM Classic twice. Kevin Chappell had finished 2nd and 8th at the RSM Classic before winning here. Will McKenzie, long time between wins and what he'd done here, but twice a runner-up at the once at the Valerius X Open, once at the RSM Classic. Daniel Summerhayes, 2nd, 4th, 7th and 13th here, and 10th for the RSM Classic. Matt Every, who, you know, very volatile career, 2nd here and 7th for the RSM Classic. John Herr, 2nd here, and it was 9th, 12th and 12th again at the RSM Classic. Freddie Jakobsen, 2nd here, 5th at the RSM Classic. Patrick Rogers, 5th and 2nd in reverse. So, and that was Rogers' best chance, right, to win on the PGA Tour. So I think the RSM Classic is a great way to look, and Åberg won that.
Yeah, I think it's great. I wasn't thinking that yet, and I think it's a great news for my Åberg bet. I just think, man, I really think he's going to win it. I haven't really felt this strongly about a guy at the top of the board for a long time, and I really, really feel strongly about him contending this week.
Is it just a little bit of a case of like he's been playing well without getting the win, and now he's going to get a slight drop? I mean, obviously Rory and Hideki are there or whatever, but a slight drop in what he's been playing against, and you think he just got to capture the title? Timing of it, maybe a little bit more motivation on his part as opposed to Rory and people like that as well?
Yeah, and that, and I mean, his stats are coming around. Like, I think it was a big adjustment period. Like, all of a sudden, he's this guy who's a favorite all the time, and everyone's saying he's the next superstar. And that's probably tough to deal with at first, and it's going to take a little bit of integrating yourself into that and that new mindset. And I think now he's starting to really be comfortable with it. He was 9th to players, and his stats are incredible there. Last week, gets to take it off, and now he's at a course where he should be really comfortable in a state that he played his college golf in. I just think it's all pointing to him.
Get excited about him for the Masters, just like from a purely betting standpoint, because he's so short in the market already, like they're not taking any chances. But from just a golf perspective, it's quite exciting to see what he'll do as a debutant.
Especially, I mean, if he comes off a win or a close, and you know, he's going to get a lot of buzz, which is great. It's great for golf.
Yeah, absolutely. Any words on Rory, Hideki, and Morikawa's chances specifically on top of Åberg?
Yeah, I mean, Rory, I was told that he's went to see Butch Harmon a couple weeks ago. Which I don't know if it's a great sign considering we're getting close to the Masters and his iron game has been off. He's talked about all of his misses left and whatnot. So I think he's kind of trying to figure it out before Augusta. And could I see him playing well here? Yeah, absolutely. Do I think he's going to win? No, I don't think he really cares about winning. I think he wants to get himself in that right spot to go and win the Masters.
But that, so he's been having problems going a bit left with his irons, right? Butch will probably sort out. He's the kind of master of sorting these things out, and I do think he can sort things out quickly. But like you say, it's not a good sign trying to do it a fortnight out before the Masters, which is what I assume when he went to him last week. And as you said, people just try and figure their games out sometimes. Like there's people like Jordan Spieth who are wanting to win this tournament every year. It's a kind of a tournament that's important to him. Houston Open, I don't remember where he played that as much. But yeah, I think it's definitely a get right spot for a lot of people. So certainly interesting. Going back into the 9Ks, then it's led by Max Homer at 9.9. Matt Fitzpatrick makes his debut 9.7. We just mentioned Spieth. And it ends with Benny Ann. Corey Connors is obviously the most obvious with you know, two wins here. But anyone that you really like in between sort of 9.9 and 9K?
Yeah. I like Benny. I think this is a great course for him. I imagine he'll probably be a little bit popular. I was looking to bet him this week, but I was hoping for maybe like a 55 or a 60.
Yeah.
Which isn't, you know, with him, probably should be expected. He's always priced a little bit worse than he should be. And I'm going to the top of the board, so I really can't fit him. But I do think it's a great course fit for me. It's good course history. He does everything well. I think, you know, he was in Texas when he was that him? No, I don't know. I don't know if that was in Texas when he lost in a playoff previously. But I think it's a good spot for him.
Look, he's played here well in the past. That's the main thing, right? Like we've got history of him playing well here. Seventh in 2019, sixth last year. That's you know, the biggest sign, right? You know, good driving golf course for him, can get accurate with it at times, and that's the main thing. So he's lost in a playoff at the Zurich Classic, the Memorial, and the Sony Open. So the Sony Open seems to be a big correlation as well. So it's good that he's played well in there in the past. I think you come down now to, I'm not going to say too much on players I'm not playing. I can't get my head around Spieth, Fleetwood at the moment. I'm slightly interested in Fitz making his debut, actually. I feel like Fitz is slowly coming around to getting back to what we thought was going to happen with him after he won that major. Now, that is, you know, purely based on the fact that he was fifth at the Players. But if what we read is true, and the fact that he had a weight in his driver that was basically ruining his golf for, you know, like a certain amount of months, then maybe that's all it takes.
Yeah, it's, I mean, absolutely crazy, that story. I mean, just playing terrible for a couple of months to start the season because he had a weight in his driver. It's unbelievable.
What's weird as well is like everyone applauds golfers for being able to figure these things out, right? And how amazing it is that they can feel those couple of grams difference or whatever. Why did it take him so long to figure it out? What point did he figure it out? Like, did he go and get it? I can't remember exactly the story. Did he go and get it and someone told him it was wrong? Like, did he not feed it this time? I don't know what it was.
Yeah. Oh, man, it's crazy. So, and if you look at it, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, he was losing strokes off the tee consistently this year, which is just so far off from what he typically just gains week after week after week. And then we see him gain over 4 strokes off the tee at the Players, which is a lot for off the tee. And that just makes me feel like it's back. I think that could really help him this week. I don't know if I feel like Texas or this course is the exact right fit for it, but I think he's one of the best players in the field. He's definitely underpriced. I mean, like, why is Morikawa more expensive than Fitzpatrick?
This is why, like, I just think from a pure value standpoint, if I'm just trying to find, like, if I wanted to start with Åberg, if you start with Åberg and Fitz instead of a pretty good lineup, like, whereas if you start having to put Rory and Morikawa in or whatever way you want to go, like, I feel like that's a more sustainable approach is to target those two. And, you know, we talked about how much we like Åberg, and I just think Fitz is in a nice price category where he's, you know, Spieth and Connors are going to get a lot of attention where you can probably make a difference with Fitz.
Yeah, absolutely.
The 8Ks. The two most obvious guys start the category for me, Billy Horschel 8.9, Alex Noren 8.7. I've bet both of them. We talked a lot about Noren last week, right? You'd bet him. You were playing him in DFS. We talked about the fact that he hasn't really quite got there and he's been playing really well without challenging. Really feels to me very similar to Jaeger. Like it's just, you know, been consistent, you know, or elevated your game for the last couple of seasons. You have an opportunity to win, bang, you take it. And I think Noren, as a 10-time DP World Tour winner, if he can just get himself in that circumstance over this weekend, he's got the carrot of Augusta in front of him as well. It is a good golf course for him. It has been a good golf course for him. In his one and only start, he finished 15th last year. He's played well at the RSM Classic, so that helps me with that sort of correlation as well. I think Noren's there and ready to kind of pounce.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said last week, I thought he was a better DraftKings play than an outright bet, which turned out to be completely true. He's probably a great DraftKings play, scored a bunch of points.
Yeah.
And as a bet, like I never really felt like he could win. But he did make a charge there on Sunday. Great course fit again this week. I like the course history. He's playing really good golf at the moment, and I think he definitely could win. Again, I can't fit him because I did pay up to the top, but he's one of the next guys I think I would add. So I like Noren a lot on DraftKings. I think he's going to play well. Billy, I think he's a great chance to win the tournament. I know I'm not alone on that one. Luckily, I bet it this morning at 45-1 before it kind of completely tanked.
Yeah.
But I was really pissed off. I've been planning to bet on this event for the last month. So my whole thing the last 3 weeks was just praying he doesn't blow his cover. And he did. He blew his cover yesterday, which cost us on the price and the popularity and all that. But I think he has a really solid chance to win, so I can't get away from it.
I think that was a really frustrating thing for me. I thought last week was a great opportunity with the fact he hadn't played the golf course for, so it wasn't everyone was going to steam into him. Like going into this week, he's got 2/3 and a 4th and 11th at his golf course. Like if he was going to have any sort of signs of winning, it was going to blow him for this week. But I'm still going to play him. I'm still going to bet him. Sometimes you just got to go with it. I honestly think he's one of the most likely to win the golf tournament, and he's right down there at 8-9. So I'm fine to carry on with that. What about Brian Harman? I know typically you're not a massive Harman guy, right? But like 18th, 22nd, and 16th, his first three starts at his golf course. Absolutely adores the RSM Classic. So if that's a thing, then great. Hasn't played here in the last sort of few years when he's kind of elevated his game, and he just seems to be playing such solid golf right now that I think he can come around here and get a win before going into the first major of the year.
He can. He does seem a little underpriced for what he does. I mean, that seems like a constant theme. No matter how much he accomplishes, he still is priced for his price. I think it should be a good spot. You've seen guys like Cooch. I mean, he's basically
Cooch
right now. Yeah. So I think it makes sense for me. I like some other guys better than him, and I'm not typically a Harman guy. Like I mentioned, I liked about the players, but that's about it. So I'm probably not going to get there, but I do think he's a little bit sneaky this week.
What do you like in this range, other than Horschel?
High eight right now, right?
Yeah, so we've covered kind of the top three, I guess, in Horschel, Noren, and Harman. We've got Adam Scott 8-5, Harris English 8-3, Russell Henley 8-2, Tom Kim 8-1, and Ricky 8.
Yeah, I'm gonna say nothing. I don't really like anything else.
Yeah, I think the closest thing for me would probably be just someone like a Henley. I can feel like he can just find it at any point, and he's for once relatively priced, but not too excited there. Let's go into the sevens. Are you gonna go back to the world with Akshay at 7-7?
I think you can. I mean, I wasn't going to, but looking back at it, I mean, his last two starts, he's finished 17th and 11th, and last week he gained over 7 strokes on approach. I mean, he's obviously playing well. He's in terms of class, he's one of the most talented players in the field, and he's still priced relatively well. So I think I am going to go back to him.
Yeah, like I want him in. Is he in the Masters already?
No, he's not.
No, so I would be pretty happy if he's in the Masters. Second in approach last week, 8th and tee to green. We saw what he did in Texas last week, so we know he can do that. Pretty sure he's actually played okay at the RSM Classic. I could be wrong on that. I like Akshay as well. Any interest in going back to the kind of European tour starlets of Bazeignhout and Rye?
I'm not a Rye guy, and I know he played good last week, but I'm just out. I do like Seabez. I mean, do I think he's capable of winning an event? That's a big question for me. But do I think he's can pay off 7,900 and finish 9th? Absolutely. And I think he's been playing really well. He's trending. He's getting better each week. This course should suit him pretty well. So, yeah, I will definitely play some of Seabez.
The one hope I've got in this range is that people give up on Mitchell quickly.
Yeah, I am gonna be so.
You're giving up on him?
Yeah.
So when I say quickly, I guess it's not quickly because people have been playing him all season, right? But I think just like after the one missed cut, people are going to kind of jump off. And actually, when you look at his sort of form here, You know, it's fine. 26th and 17th in two starts. I could just see him having a little bounce back there. And I think at 7,600, he's reasonably well priced. So kind of just go and be a filler on your team. Not be the leading charge and the hope that people have had over the last few weeks, but actually just play a role. I think he's perfect for that.
Yeah, I think so too. What do you think his ceiling is? Do you think he can win?
Seventh.
Yep.
Like seventh, eighth. Like I can just see him doing kind of what he's been doing, you know, throughout the season, like a ninth at the Honda, ninth at the Amex. I think he can go a little bit better just, you know, based on you can and form will align. But yeah, I think that's kind of where I see him doing. I don't see him winning. I don't want to rest my hopes anymore. People are going to play Hostler, I guess, because it's Texas. Like, I think I'm done with that experiment. I was done with Hostler for a while. But I can see people going back to that drawing board.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm out on him. Did you say someone else after that?
No.
Okay, no. I like McNealy.
Yeah.
I don't know if he can win or not. Probably not. But I like the fact that he's playing better now. He played well at this course in his one start here, and he didn't even putt or chip very well, which is unlike him. So I think if he gets that figured out, which he will, it's a good course for him. I like that he's working with Butch Harmon. I'm kind of high on him going forward because of that. I want to see if that makes a difference. And I think while we can still buy relatively low here, it's a good time to take a swing at it.
Yeah, I took the shot at the Valspar. It didn't necessarily pay off, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't happen, you know, a couple of weeks later, right? And to your point, that first start, 35th place finish, but he was actually 7th going into Sunday. So at 7-4, I think he's relatively cheap. I think we've got a lot of players in here that have been popular, right, but just don't seem to be sort of paying back the faith in Mitchell Hostler, Denny McCarthy, you know, whatever. And then we've had people like Van Rooyen, who's done well for us, but probably is running out of kind of, you know, top finishes. So I think at some point you have to kind of hitch a, you know, wagon to somebody else, and I think McNealy might be the one. The other one I might go for again is Glover at 7-3. Went to him to the Valspar, didn't do it right, but the weird thing, I was playing Glover purely because of his ball striking, and it was terrible. It was kind of his short game that was keeping it in last week and or 2 weeks ago. He finished 11th, he was 6th after 36 holes. That was the best position he'd been in at that tournament. And kind of fell away, but he's been good here. Like, he missed the cut on debut, but then 14th, 4th, 18th, 45th last year was, you know, relatively disappointing. But before that, when he was 18th, he was 5th after 36 holes. When he was 4th, he was inside the top 8 for the final 3 rounds. And when he was 14th, he was 12th going into the final day. I think Lucas Glover can very easily go and finish inside the top 10 this week.
Yeah, I mean, if I was PGA Tour player who went and looked at my betting prices and my DraftKings prices, I don't think I could find anyone who should be more offended than Lucas Glover. I mean, what he's done lately, and he has good course history. I mean, he's 7,300, he's like 80-1 on the betting board. I really just don't get it. I was looking at that, like, I don't think he's gonna win, but I was staring at that number saying, like, this is not, it's just not the right number. It's silly.
No, I had a couple of guys that were just like in the hundreds, right, that I've gone to in the betting, just because I feel like that there's a little bit more there in terms of price point and in terms of I think they've probably got similar win equity, but I just think in terms of the steadiness, I think Lucas Glover fits the lineups better. So for this kind of format, I'm all in on Lucas Glover.
Do you think he can win?
Yeah, I think he can. Like, it feels, you know, we've already used this comparison once, but it doesn't feel much different to Matt Kuchar going second and third the last couple of years, does it?
Yeah, yeah. It does feel like it. So I don't know. I'm looking at that 80-1. I don't know if it. I might regret not betting it, but we'll see.
There's one player that I've actually written up and taken out, and then there was Glover, who was the final person on the list. So we'll cover the guy that I kind of wrote up and took out and replaced in a minute. But Glover was firmly in the thoughts. Anyone else in this 7K range you're interested in? Still toying with the idea of a Victor Perez kind of breakthrough, anyone?
No, not really.
No? You had your fun with that and you're done with it?
Yeah.
Anything else?
No, not in the sevens, no.
Cool. Let's hit the six then. So we've got Doug Gim, Adam Schenk, 6,900. I think there's going to be, just based on some bets that I've seen this morning, Davis Riley at 6,800, I imagine would be pretty popular. But it's another guy at 6,800 that I really like, and it's KH Lee. So this was a guy I bumped out Lee Hodges out of my betting card. And the reason I did that is I think he's early on his kind of return to form. I think he's been steady in the last few weeks. And I do think he can come out and win at some point again. But I think that KH Lee is a couple of notches above him. He's, you know, fourth at the Cognizant Classic, ninth at the Valspar, 31st last week in Houston. And Matt, this is a guy, you know, back-to-back wins in Texas at the Byron Nelson. I know it's a different golf course, but you look at his form here as well. He was 14th on debut, second going into the weekend, fourth going into the final round, finished 14th. I think all of his wins have come since then. And then he was 23rd 2 years later. Did miss the cut 2 years ago, but not too worried about that. That happens every now and then. I think KH Lee is suddenly playing a little bit better. The slight concern is his approach game isn't all the way there, but he's certainly improving off the tee, which is huge.
Yeah, exactly. I bet him at 150-1 this morning. I just saw that he plays good at those TPC courses, which maybe it's a more of a narrative than it is an actual course related thing, but still, I mean, it's a TPC course. He won twice in Texas, like you mentioned. His off the tee numbers are getting good, and if you look at it looks like the numbers aren't that great, but if you I broke it down round by round, and he's gained strokes ball striking off the tee plus approach in each of his last seven rounds individually. So I think he's starting to get it together, and this is a course that he has played well in the past, and I think it's a place where he could not win.
Just feels like the time of year where I think KH Lee comes alive as well. So I certainly think that he, to me, Matt, is one of those people that doesn't he feel like when you get down to 6Ks, you're obviously struggling for win equity, but he feels like the type of person that can do it.
Yeah, I think he definitely can do it. I love the bet. Did you bet him too?
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, I like the bet a lot. And I think it's a really cheap price for him.
Beating Sam Burns and Jordan Spieth in his two wins.
Yeah, both Texas guys too, right?
Yeah. So I just think that and the fact that, I think it was one of those things where if he had just played well at the Byron Nelson, never played well here, I can't just say, look, it's Texas and he's going to play well again because different golf courses, right? But when he's had a good finish here in the past already and actually promised to be better throughout the, you know, his debut as well, I think he could have learned a lot from that, and he's obviously in a good place. So KH Lee, I feel like, is a very steady play at 6,800 and probably my favorite in terms of value. And then the other guy I mentioned was Lee Hodges, who I do think is coming back into really good form, has pieced it together over the last few weeks. Really slow start to the year, but his approach play is getting better. I just think, Matt, that maybe his, in terms of betting, like Lee Hodges' ceiling might be 15th, whereas I think KH Lee's is actually win. And that was probably a difference between me playing him as a bet and not. So I think he's good for this 6,700 price point.
Yeah, I like a couple guys down here. He's not for me, but I understand the appeal. There's a couple other guys here that I actually think can win.
Is Ryan Moore one of them?
Yeah.
Okay, so 6,500. This is all relative speaking. 6,500 can't get that popular, right? So he's not going to be.
Right, no, I don't think so.
He's going to be double digits in ownership, right?
I think he probably, 9-10% would be my guess.
Well, you think he could get as high as 10%? But that's fine, right? Like, that's not going to damage your lineups. So
no.
So I think with Ryan Moore, like, we've mentioned this, you mentioned it to last week, and I think basically what we come to the conclusion was, now that he's fit, he can play well again. The debate was, can he play well on the golf course because it's a bit too long? I think it played out exactly that. Like you mentioned, you were pretty confident he would play well. He would ball strike it well again. That's exactly what he did. Probably just too long for him to finish better than top 30.
Yeah, he did exactly what I wanted him to do. The course is definitely too long for him. He's still pretty short, really short off the tee. And that course, I don't think you can really do that. And my whole thought process was, I wanted to bet him a week early last week at 150, whatever, because I thought this week's the week for him, and at 150-1, I didn't want to miss it last week, which I didn't think I would. But I wanted to play well enough to where he could carry some momentum and continue that good play to this event where I think he can win. He didn't play so well that he completely blew his cover and made himself too expensive. And so he did exactly what I wanted him to do. I got him at the place I wanted to on the betting board and on the DraftKings board. He's one of my favorite plays anywhere.
8th, 18th, 7th, and 3rd, his first four starts here. 76th and missed cut the last two. But even when he was 76th, right, he was 23rd going into the weekend. I think that's probably, you can probably look back and it's probably when the downward form started last year, I'm not going to worry too much. Another guy, right, like the form started back up again in the fall series, and he was eighth at the RSM Classic. So I love that. Just perfect. I was surprised he was still 150 to 1.
And he's, yeah, I was too.
Like I feel like he's the one. Maybe they're just dangling because they know people are going to pick up on a name and there's course form, and it's probably potentially unlikely that he will win, right? But I do really think that he's going to contend, and ninth, second, and eighth in his last three starts and strokes gain approach kind of leans into that. And as you said, like, he done exactly what we wanted last week, 16th first and 16th last three in tee to green. I would actually say the 30th first was maybe better than I expected based on the length of the golf course, right? So I think he's playing really well. So 6,500, I think he's up there, someone that can contend. The other guy, same price, Max Grazeman. Just look, I don't know a bunch about this guy, right? Like, I'm not gonna sit there. He's come off a Korn Ferry. I know he's had spot starts on the PGA Tour before. He was 56 for the Amex, but he opened 67, 68, 66. So I thought that was a pretty good start. Had to withdraw from Mexico, but then since then he's been 47th at the Cognizant Classic, but he's 11th going into the final round. He was then 15th from Puerto Rico, where he was inside the top 10 for the first three rounds. He was a first round leader. 33rd at the Valspar, I think it's pretty solid. And then 7th last week at the Houston Open. I love all of that about Max Grazeman. Then you look at the fact that, you know, his 7th last week in Houston was his standout finish. He was 18th on this golf course when they were on the Korn Ferry Tour. The TPC San Antonio Challenge, I think, is when Davis Riley won. I think Max Grazeman is you know, improving as a player right in front of our eyes the last few weeks. And 6,500. I mean, look, I think there's two things about him being 6,500. One, I think it highlights how low price Ryan Moore is, because I think Ryan Moore is an established golfer we know everything about, who loves his golf course. But I think Max Grazeman is still good value, and he's just maybe on the up, and, you know, I don't know what he can do in his career going forward, but I think, you know, right now he's good price.
Yeah, seems like it. I'm sure he's going to go a little bit under the radar. I did see his name on the leaderboard a bit last week, so I get it. I have another guy down here who I really like. It's kind of trusting course history a lot, but I like Charlie Hoffman.
Yeah.
6,400. He hasn't been playing that great since his playoff loss at Phoenix, but Phoenix is a place that he always plays well. It's one of his courses. Now he's going back to his, you know, the course he's played the best at over the course of his career.
Yeah.
Has won the event. I mean, I think he has like 11 top 15 finishes and 15 tries there. He's automatic, absolutely automatic. The one year he didn't play really well was last year, and he wasn't playing good at all that time. So the fact that he just contended, you know, 6 weeks ago, and now he's going to this course, it tells me he can contend here too. And he actually hit it pretty well at the Valspar. He missed the cut, but he gained strokes on approach. So I'm happy at this price to go to him and see if we can get one more run out of him.
Yeah, really good off approach, right, at the Valspar. Almost as good as he was in Phoenix. It's, I guess, the off the tee has been patchy in three of the last four starts, right? But again, the approach was fine in Mexico for the couple of rounds he was there. The putter's deserted him a little bit since Phoenix. It was solid at the RSM, interestingly. I think he's just a guy now. Right? I think people are looking and go, oh, it's a trap. He's 6,400. He's just got good course history and he's done now. But there's guys that can just get hot three times a year. And this is probably this Phoenix and I don't know what else, but maybe even the RSM, something like that, that he can still do. And that's all that matters, right? If you believe that he can still do this, that's what we care about.
Yeah, exactly.
Is JJ Spawn too cheap at 6,300?
I mean, yeah, one here he probably is. Maybe it's sense. Could be a trap.
But, like, if I'm going to say Charlie Hoffman isn't, I don't really want to say JJ Spawn is. Like, he was 36th last week, 14th going into the weekend, made the cut of the Players at least. I know he missed the cut in between at the Valspar, but it's not been a great year for JJ Spawn. But I just feel like, look, we know he can play well at this golf course. He's won at it. It's where the peak of his career has happened. So, yeah, first and 22nd in the last 2 years. I think Spawn's a viable option here at 63. Anyone else that you're really keen on? Like, the players I was keen on prior to this week of, you know, shit the bed, Joel Damon was disappointing. Just quickly on Joel Damon, pretty annoying. He jumped in front of Stephen Yeager's wife for a hug yesterday on his first ever PJ Tour win.
I think I missed that one.
Yeah, go to the PJ Tour Instagram, and you'll see him just going, calling him Jagerbomb, which absolutely makes sense, right? And then just right in front of his wife, just runs over and gives him the first hug. And you can see Jager just trying to get around him to get to his wife. It was pretty weird. Bit main character syndrome, I thought. Maybe not intentionally. Like, I imagine they're good friends, but, like, just a bad look, I thought. I think what they thought looked a good thing for Joel Damon, bad in my eyes. Maybe I'm just too harsh of a critic.
Yeah, he does have more characters from that, definitely true.
Yeah. I think if you're coming down to 6K and below this week, I think you're potentially in trouble based on what we've said and how we could build already. Joe Highsmith seems to be playing pretty well this season. 34th Amex, 33rd Torrey, 6th Puerto Rico, 21st last week in Houston. He's only 5,800. Sam Stevens was second here last year, but not playing great. Badley's good here if people always keep going on about Aaron Badley. Ben Martin's played well here a couple of times. But the one person who I think could shock Matt, and I think I might actually add as a long shot bet in the end, I think Nico Echevarria, this could be another spot for him.
Interesting.
Because I thought he should have played last week, right? And I think I'm pretty sure that was based on the fact that Korn Ferry Tour event in Texas was somewhere that he played well before. So let's just look back and just sort of verify it. But there's quite a bit of crossover in terms of Puerto Rico Open and form here, which may probably just come down to field strength, right? But yeah, it was that Veritas Bank Championship. He's fifth in 2021, seventh in 2022. So that's two good of finishes in Texas on the Korn Ferry Tour. He then comes to his debut here that was his second start here last year, but he was 28th and he was 10th going into the weekend. Did miss the cut when he was on the Korn Ferry Tour. But I think he's improving a bit, Matt. It's always been a guy that we, could spike. He's always a trendy play at 400-1. People like to talk about it. But he made three cuts in a row, and I don't think that's something. Twice he's made three cuts in a row this season already. I suppose you can't really call making a cut of the century, but top 25 there. 24th in the Mexico Open, 9th going into the weekend, 21st in the Cognizant, 11th going into Sunday, 15th at the Puerto Rico Open, 8th going into Sunday. I'm fine with him missing the cut of the Players and the Valspar. It doesn't really bother me. So I think there's an opportunity at 5,600 for Echevarria to do something.
Yeah, I could see it. Chan played well again last week. Another course, maybe not quite as suitable as last week's, but I don't mind that at the price. CT Pan's been flashing a little bit, 6,100. I don't mind him either.
Yeah.
Chandler Phillips was involved a couple of weeks ago, and he's a Texas guy too, so he's really cheap as well.
Yeah, I think he was the one that I kind of played in first round leader market last week based on the strength of him playing so well in Texas, obviously, and being from there. But probably just a more suitable golf course, pretty short off the tee, Chandler Phillips. So this could be the one to play him at. I think that's probably it, Matt. I think that's it. We're going to be back at some point later on this week with the Masters preview. The pricing is out for that already. Quick shout out to the fact that you did tell me that Jake Knapp is potentially the worst player on the PGA Tour. And I mean, what was he, 5 over through 6 or something ridiculous? But
yeah, he is the worst.
I mean, he won the Mexico Open and then just made that correlation look absolutely shit until the end. Like, I was like, oh my God, what have we done? And then everyone recovered it. But Corey, he didn't do that any favors.
Yeah. No.
What's happened to him? I don't know.
I just think it was, I just think people overrated one win at one of the weakest field events in the entire season and conflated that with being a superstar. When you have guys like Echevarria, there's one. Is he a superstar? He won in Puerto Rico. The field was exactly the same, minus Tony Finau.
Yeah.
I just think it was the story people were too quick to grasp on to call a guy a star.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Rather than going price by price, Matt, let's give a lineup's worth of our favorite plays this week. So from any price point, just pick 6 guys you think across the board you quite like.
Yeah, I'll be starting Åberg Billy, no doubt about that. And then you can probably dip down. I like Seabez as a play. I think he's solid. I like McNealy at 7,400. And then a lot of guys in the 6 I think are viable. Cage, Lee, Ryan Moore, and Charlie Hoffman would be my favorite 3.
Yeah, so for me, it's definitely Åberg Billy as well. I like that Cage, Lee thing. So it's good that we're aligning on those 3. I think Lucas Glover can make a lot of sense at 7-3. I think he's overlooked. Lee Hodges, I like. And I do like that Nico Echevarria player at 5,800. So I think there's a lot of viable options there, but you can do a bunch of other things, right? Like if you want to play Hideki and Aberg, I think you can do that if you start putting in Echevarria, right? I think you can still probably get Horschel in there and build a decent, I mean, look, very quickly before you came out, Aberg, Matsuyama, Horschel, Echevarria leaves at 7,200 for two other guys.
You could go more and Lee and still leave money on the table, and you still have three guys who at least can win.
Correct. Yeah. Or you can pay up and have someone, you know, decent, right? Like that leaves you 1,100 on the table.
Yeah.
So there you go. I think that's a, you know, you can see there just by playing Echevarria what you can do. Or if you think Echevarria is a little bit unsafe, you want to go 6,700, put Lee Hodges in 6,700. It's there. There's the opportunity to pivot. So Matt, happy with that. I think we've got a good read on that. It's nice to only have one tournament to focus on this week as opposed to a DP World Tour event as well. Good lead into the Masters. I enjoy this tournament. Clocks have gone forward. Everything's right in the world. Let's have a good week and get ready for the Masters.
All right, let's do it. I'm looking forward to that Masters show. It should be a great time.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Matt.